I'm ready as I'll ever be.
Awesome. Well, hello and welcome into another episode of the Data Center Frontier Show podcast. I'm your host, editor-in-chief of Data Center Frontier, Matt Vincent. And we're here today with a man who may need no introduction with many in the data center industry, at least if you follow along on LinkedIn. It's Philip Koblenz. He's chief operating officer at New York Internet, NYI, and also a key member of the industry's Nomad Futurist initiative. So, Philip, welcome in. Thanks for sitting down to chat with Data Center Frontier.
Thanks for having me, Matt. If my career can be summed up and kind of determined by the number of selfies I put on LinkedIn, I assume that I'm at the pinnacle.
Well, you are a popular figure, and you make incredible rounds. And, you know, I want to talk to you about the DCD, the recent Data Center Dynamics show in New York, where we met. And since there's two things I want to talk about, ringing out the last few reflections from the show, because I saw what you posted on LinkedIn about your insights or takeaways. And then talking about my excellent tour of 60 Hudson Street that you were kind enough to conduct for me while I was down there for DCD. Maybe we should start with DCD, just in the sense it's a two for one. I'm going to give you the choice which you'd rather talk about first. I read in your DCD bio that you started New York Internet, or NYI, in 1996. Do I have that right?
That is right. When I had long, luscious locks, and look what this industry has done to me.
So take me back, since we're going to be talking about my tour of 60 Hudson, take me back to the first day that you walked into 60 Hudson as to operate a co-location.
Sure, that actually happened much later. So 1996, I didn't even know what 60 Hudson was back in 96. I don't think anybody knew what really the internet was back in 1996. Right. I'm not even sure the first time I walked into 60 Hudson Street, it was probably in the early 2000s, but our entry, NYI's entry to 60 Hudson Street, was much later. We acquired a company that was one of the original multi-tenant data center connectivity plays at 60 Hudson called Sirius Telecom in 2018. But 60 Hudson had been on the radar for us for years. You know, all connectivity that we were seeing in New York went through 60 Hudson Street. So for the most part, there's a lot of 111/8 and 32A/A. You know, we went through some of that history. But, you know, in terms of if you know, the industry in New York as it relates to data center and digital infrastructure had really started evolving toward connectivity as the main focus of New York, as, you know, the cloud became more of a place where people were putting critical infrastructure, the price of power and the price of space as densities increased. Started pushing a lot of the workloads out of New York City. Connectivity became key. So where better for us to evolve NYI than to become a player in 60 Hudson Street, which is at the core of connectivity in New York.
One figure that stuck with me, is this correct? You told me that 70% of internet traffic for New York City still goes through 60 Hudson Street. Is that?
I don't know that we have any good, actual metrics on that. You can say anything confidently, and people will believe it. I think the quote that I said was like 90% of internet traffic goes through legacy facilities, like some of the kind of core meet me rooms at buildings like 60 Hudson Street, like 350 Cermak, like 1 Wilshire Street. And beyond. So that's really where I think there's a disconnect between how people think the internet works in these large new greenfield type builds. And there's certainly plenty of that, with, the coming, AI wave and whatnot. But when it comes to actually, network traffic traversing the internet, a lot of that happens in rooms that you probably wouldn't put on the cover page of a lot of digital infrastructure magazines. And I think that's where a lot of the magic is. I've always gravitated towards, that type of experience.
That's what's really so fascinating to me about 60 Hudson is that it's still telling a lot of stories about the data center industry that are, you know, right up to date, in addition to handling so much of the traffic. You know, the interconnection piece is huge. I mean, you showed me all the cables coming in for the various providers. And I think also at the time of my tour, there was a gentleman was splicing a fiber that was going across to New Jersey for the first time in 30 years. You described that to me. And then the adaptive design component is something that we're talking about all the time. You know, we talked a lot on my tour about the raised floor, you know, the pros and cons and the challenges with having a raised floor in a building like that. And, you know, it brings me to the topic of multi-story data centers too, in the adaptive design piece. But as long as I bring it up, you know, what can be said about the, you know, from, you know, from your chair about the, those elements?
I think the, there's some stuff to unpack there, right? I think anytime you're dealing with, legacy buildings in major cities, these are historic buildings, right? So, you know, I think, 60 Hudson Street was originally the Western Union Building. I think it got built in the '30s. The 1930s, we're almost at the 2030s. So we're going to have to make that distinction pretty soon. And, you know, there's ceiling heights were different. You know, there's a lot more, there's a lot more flexibility you have if you have a new construction, you know, going on, anywhere, but, certainly in the middle of the country or in Jersey or, you know, Texas, et cetera, in terms of ceiling heights. So, I think what we talked about was the different use cases and whether, you know, raised floor versus slab on grade and some of those issues as it relates to, you know, floor loading and floor ceiling heights and all that. And, you know, I think, again, in general, everyone wants to be easy and bumper stickery about, you know, the one size fits all in terms of a data center. And the way it was when I was coming into my own in the 90s was, you know, it was a raised floor. Raised floor environment is what a data center environment is, right? But if you have ceiling height restrictive issues, then you have to take into account the fact that if you only have, let's say, 10 feet or 15 feet and you want a 2-foot raised floor or a 3-foot raised floor, which is where all the air comes out of, then, you know, you're minimizing maybe the heights of the cabinets that you can put in there. So when we first started, it was, you know, 42 U-racks were the norm. Then it went to 45. Now it's, you know, 48, 52 and beyond. I had somebody talking to me about a 58 U-rack that they were putting in a deployment in Los Angeles. So, you know, if you're trying to essentially retrofit a building that has all of the connectivity for a kind of modern use case, these are the types of things that have to be taken into account. And you have to recognize what type of workloads you can put in what environment and understand the nuance of those various elements. For a for you know, a carrier deployment, you might not necessarily care about, you know, rack heights and trying to create the most dense type of cabinet environment. So that might still work in some of the kind of legacy environments. But if you're retrofitting to a modern day, you know, compute, I'm not even talking about, you know, the, you know, 100 kilowatt cabinets and beyond that are being deployed for AI. But if you're talking about even a 10 or 15 kilowatt rack, you know, you're likely going to want you're going to want a slab on grade. You're going to want some level of containment, which is something that we've employed really well to try to, you know, increase the airflow and efficiencies of these sites. But you have to be, people don't necessarily consider creativity to be an earmark of, you know, digital infrastructure. And you have to be pretty creative about the solutions. And I have the benefit of, you know, having seen the industry kind of evolve because me and the industry started at the same time. So, you know, we have very much been, Nabil on my partner in Nomad Futurist usually says, you know, sewing the parachute on the way down, fixing the airplane while it's in the air, you know, any number of metaphors where we've had to come up with these out of the box solutions. And there's a recognition that this kind of practical approach to how you deploy data centers and what the workloads are and how you can retrofit these environments and understand their limitations and not pretend that it's the same type of workloads and the same type of environment at a 60 Hudson Street or a 350 Cermak or a 1 Wilshire Street or a 32 AFA or a 111 8th as it would be in, you know, a 1547 facility in Orangeburg that's being deployed or DataBank facility that's being, you know, built to modern day standards today. Those are just not the same workloads or use cases, although they all fall under the digital infrastructure umbrella. And I'm a fan of history of the way this stuff works. And what we try to say on the Nomad Futurist side is, you know, this concept of understanding critical thinking, understanding problem solving is more valuable than understanding, you know, a specific element of the underlying technology. If you understand how all of it kind of fits together and the nuances of the various deployments, it's a superpower when you know, applied to the various places where digital infrastructure is deployed.
It kind of brings me to a question that I wanted to ask, which is that would anyone ever put a data center in a skyscraper if they didn't have to? Because you guys seem to do it no problem. I mean, you know, you get the generators, you know, upstairs in a penthouse. But I mean, you know, what is the limit of that kind of design thinking? I mean, is it not that much of a hurdle?
What did Frank Sinatra say, right? If you can make it here, you can make it anywhere. So if you can deploy data centers in New York City, you can probably deploy data centers anywhere. But that being said, I think there's digital infrastructure exists everywhere, right? So it honestly depends on the scale. Would you choose a skyscraper to deploy, a 15 megawatt, data center for a hyperscaler? Probably not. Right. Would you choose a skyscraper for, you know, a giant AI deployment farm? Probably not. But, the internet needs eyes and ears everywhere. So there's an element of all buildings, especially with the coming wave of, you know, commercial real estate and you know, hybrid work and repurposing, vacancy rates skyrocketing, you're gonna have to find a way to repurpose and add value to skyscrapers that exist. And there's no doubt that there are elements of digital infrastructure that lend themselves well to placing them in large multi-tenant buildings, not just from a data center standpoint, but from a commercial real estate standpoint. So whether that means, trying to aggregate, create meet me rooms, create some element of digital infrastructure that feeds, you know, tenants of a building, whether that building is residential or commercial, everyone, whether they're working from home or they have an office where, you know, they're congregating and communicating around the world globally with their clients and partners and employees, everyone has mission critical needs in their own business as it relates to digital infrastructure. So just from that standpoint, we can no longer say that, you know, the criticality of digital infrastructure is only relevant to 60 Hudson Street or 350 Cermak. There was a time during my career where, you know, if you didn't have internet in your office, you can continue to do business. You can continue your day and, you know, you're just, you know, you wouldn't be able to, you know, surf the web. I'm using air quotes. I don't know if this is video or not. Now you can't do anything if you don't have internet. So you can't just rely on the fact that you have a DSL line to Verizon or even a Fios 10 gig connection. Because if that goes away, you're out of business for the day. You know, you have to go home. There's no point in even sticking around, really. I think the way we leverage digital infrastructure as a society, both personally and in business and in school. I mean, schools are critical infrastructure, right? They need connectivity constantly. There is no more phone lines anymore, right? So if the internet goes down, the school has no more phone connectivity because it's all over IP. You need to run BGP. You need to have some level of criticality, you know, and that's getting further and further to the point where, you know, you might have to have a like a Verizon phone and a T-Mobile phone in your pocket, because if something happens to the T-Mobile network, you still want, you know, connectivity. So, you know, that redundancy is only getting further towards the edge. I hate to use buzzwords because they drive me crazy. But at the end of the day, critical infrastructure is all around us, and our use of it requires that we, you know, kind of, you know, continue that redundancy and kind of data center mindset, you know, as close to the individual as possible.
Yeah, I wonder if some of the telco companies are going to start offering like little micro data centers to, maybe they probably already are, right? But I mean, you know, edge is certainly a buzzword, but I also know they're thinking hard about it. Maybe this is a good time to pivot for a minute. I'd like to go back to 60 Hudson, but maybe 60 Hudson, like the building and the legacy, is a topic that we can, you know, go back to or keep going back to. But, you know, they were certainly talking about edge data center dynamics, and I saw your LinkedIn post sort of recapping. What struck you most about that very big, you know, industry gathering this time?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think I'm obviously, anybody that's ever followed me on LinkedIn knows I'm a huge fan of collaboration and getting together at conferences. The conference attendance has continued to go up. You know, I think, you know, every event that we've had so far in 2024, from PTC to Metro Connect to DCD, all of them have been like 1.5 times at least the size that they were the year before. Part of that is because we have a lot of stuff to say, and you know, the evolution, innovation is moving at a breakneck pace, both on, you know, the network side and the infrastructure side, and obviously the AI side. Part of it is likely related to the fact that the alternative to going to conferences is actually working. And that's unthinkable. Why would you want to work when you can go to a conference and take pictures of yourself all day? So, you know, what strikes me, with a conference like DCD in particular, is, you know, when PTC and Metro Connect are very kind of connectivity focused, and DCD is like the first conference of the year as we get towards, you know, Data Center World, and you know, AFCOM is coming up, where you're actually talking about not just the connectivity element of it, but the underlying infrastructure that powers these data centers. You talk a lot about, you know, AI and the increase in density to cabinets from when I started, you know, 2 kilowatts, that was it, you know, 20 amp, 110 A and B. And now you have, you know, Cyrus One talking about 300 kilowatts in a rack, and you have all of this evolution of immersion cooling and technologies to be able to try to deal with this influx of you know, huge power consuming, you know, AI workloads. And we're at the beginning of that trajectory. Right. So inevitably, just like it did in standard processing before it was the GPU, those, you know, socket 370 Intel CPUs took a ton of power and then they got efficient. So I think, you know, the GPUs are inevitably going to become more efficient. But, you know, we are orders of magnitude above, you know, the density that we started with. And it can't just be a talking point. There is actual technology that needs to be deployed to be able to leverage the infrastructure that's in place today. You know, nothing is easy, right? But it's one thing to build a greenfield new data center to modern day specs. It is another thing to try to, you know, retrofit, you know, not just the legacy infrastructure that we're talking about that was built at the turn of the century, in the late 90s and early 2000s, to modern day applications, but to retrofit the stuff that was built to 12 kilowatts a cabinet, which we thought was going to be, that was good. You know, no one was ever going to surpass that. And we surpassed that in record time. Like that is mundane now. And, you know, kind of a low density, type of deployment in modern day parlance, and the amount of innovation that needs to be created in order to accommodate that is spectacular. And we don't talk about it enough, because we talk about this evolution as though it's like kind of a zero sum game. You know, we just add more stuff. Yeah, no problem. You have a 10 megawatt data center campus in, you know, Virginia. Just put AI in there as though, you could just do it. And that's not necessarily the case. You need to coordinate with all sorts of innovators in how to achieve those types of densities in facilities that, you know, there was expected to be significantly more useful life out of.
I think that's dead on. And, you know, the astonishing thing is, you know, how fast, you know, the pace of, you know, things move with, the GPUs that are coming out. And I was talking to somebody else in the industry, and they were pointing out, I guess, that, you know, the densities for when you go from like the H100 to the H200 to the Grace Hopper to the Blackwell, the densities are different, I guess. And this goes.
Yeah, the densities go up exponentially, but, you know, as a like digital infrastructure community, as a kind of technology community, the sense that it's going to continue to go up defies logic, because it doesn't necessarily take into account the way these trajectories have gone in the past. It goes up until it starts coming down, and then people start focusing on efficiency. So I think even Blackwell is a more efficient use of power than the H100s. And, you know, at some point you're going to be able to, I'm not suggesting we're going to go back to, you know, 2 kW a rack. I don't think that's the case, but I also, as a data center infrastructure kind of, you know, ambassador for our industry, I want to be like, rah, rah, we're going to continue to build more, and we're the fastest growing industry out there. But I'm also a realist when I realize that, you know, we're building these 400 megawatt campuses that are based on this exponential continued increase in density, when in reality it's going to flatten out. That's not to say that some, you know, quantum will you know, start ramping back up, but these are pendulums that go up and down. So this I'm not, again, suggesting that the infrastructure that's being built here is ever not going to be used, but in much the same way that our existing industry has ebbed and flowed, where, you know, the 2 megawatt facility was no longer relevant to, you know, compute resources, and the migration was to have those maybe focus more on connectivity, if at all, depending on where they physically sat. And then, you know, it was 5 megawatt campuses and 10 megawatt campuses, and those became quaint for, you know, a sort of compute. It's going to continue to ebb and flow, where, you know, these 400 megawatt campuses are likely to not look the way the current deployments of AI would have you believe that they will look. And I don't know if that's as a result of immersion, or that's as a result of efficiencies that are going to be built into the processing, the processor. So you're not going to need 300 megawatt densities, because there are a lot of issues that come along with that. That it's just, you know, at some point it becomes impractical to have that amount of power in such a small footprint, even if you have, you know, the small form factor nuclear, you know, reactor to be able to power it. It's a lot of eggs in a single basket. So it becomes difficult, even immersion, right? You lose power for a second, you know, all of a sudden the water starts bubbling up, and who knows, you know, you just created a projectile. So I don't want to get into all that, but at the end of the day, I think, you know, we would be as an industry served better by taking a kind of 50,000 foot view and understanding the history, so that, you know, we can understand what the future holds.
I think it really does go back beyond the buzzword to edge, because this person I was talking to in the data center industry was saying, you know, they're going to have to stop trying to put it all into one data center. You know, so does that mean that, you know, there'll always be a place for the 2 megawatt or the 5 megawatt facility, you know, just in a different strategy?
Obviously, I have to believe that, right? Because that's my whole life is these legacy facilities that I think, you know, have significant usefulness even to modern day deployments, if positioned appropriately. So I think the short answer is yes. And I have this thing that I always say about the edge, which is, you know, the earth is a sphere. And I'm sure there'll be all sorts of people saying it's not a sphere, it's an oblong sphere or whatever. But by definition, there is no edge. It's everywhere, right? Because it's a circle-ish. So, you know, the concept of it being in one place or another makes no sense. It's going to be everywhere, right? And I look at legacy facilities that particularly those in major, you know, whether you want to call them NFL cities or major connectivity hubs, or where, you know, kind of, you know, the internet is most mature, are always going to be necessary to facilitate, you know, connectivity with these AI sites. And if I had to guess, I would say right now you have this concept of, you know, inference versus machine learning and generative AI. And right now you can put those two things fairly far apart, because inference happens, you know, quote unquote, at the edge where the eyeballs are, where data is being processed, and then it gets sent to these larger farms. As AI evolves, and I am by no means an expert in any of this stuff, right? But as AI evolves, those two things, you're going to start creating so much data that needs to be processed, that distance is going to have to shrink. And the only way to effectuate that shrinking is to bring, you know, those smaller kind of major city places closer together with those other places. And whether that means, you know, more deployments of higher capacity in, you know, higher density kind of cities from a network perspective, more significant connectivity between those major cities and some of these large scale sites, regardless of which direction it goes, the edge is going to play a huge part in effectuating that.
For sure. I wanted to touch on an earlier thing that you said about you know, collaboration, and you know, that seems to be another part of the is taking you back to 60 Hudson again, to this story that 60 Hudson is still telling, is about Sean Farney from JLL has called it co-opetition. And you know, I noticed how friendly you were with your counterpart from Hudson InterExchange on our tour. I didn't know if maybe you could drop in with some thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think I think I've always been a fan of the phrase "the rising tide raises all boats." My organizing principle is that we are trying to facilitate connectivity. We're trying to make the internet work better. There are workloads that make sense within our facilities. There are workloads that make sense within Hudson IX facilities. There are workloads that make sense within DRT. There are workloads that make sense within DataBank. And we should all collectively try to leverage the assets that we have access to, and work together to try to create the most cohesive solution for the client, the end user, the application that's possible. 60 Hudson as an example, and this is true not just at 60 Hudson, but all of the kind of de facto carrier hotels, again, 350, One Wilshire, et cetera. They have become known as difficult places to do business in traditionally, because it's a full-time job to figure out like where you're going to connect to, you know, the proper network in the most cost-effective way. What we've tried to do is we've tried to kind of create relationships and build a kind of managed ecosystem and become not so much a data center facility, because we'll never be able to compete on, you know, greenfield builds. There's always going to be, doesn't matter who you are, there's always going to be a newer, shinier, more relevant data center that's built anywhere. So we look at ourselves as NYI, as more of a solutions facilitator than a facility. So it's that you, and we've tried to thread that storyline over the course of the last, you know, couple of decades, my God, of this transition from facility to facilitator. There are some workloads that make sense in our environment. There are some workloads where we just want to facilitate the solution in somebody else's environment. And we look at ourselves as that kind of connective tissue to where the various carriers and network providers are. So with Hudson IX, it's an incredible partnership, right? We are essentially, you know, their gateway to a number of connections in the building in the same way that they provide us access to infrastructure that that you know is of a higher tier that that you know, wouldn't necessarily make sense or be possible to be deployed in our environment. And that relationship extends beyond just them. It includes, you know, the data banks of the world and you know, partnerships with providers across the country and across the world. We just want to help get people sorted so they can focus on their core competency, which is building, you know, kick-ass applications that that power our increasingly digital world. That sounds very polished, but you know, it is what it is.
It sounds immense for a podcast, and that's what we're all listening to now. You know,
it's true. It's true. I was always told I have a face for radio. I didn't realize that podcasts killed a radio star.
No, you got a face for LinkedIn.
I got a face for LinkedIn. Exactly.
And some fine photographs too. But well. I'll give you the last word here. I hope we can do this again. Certainly a lot of stuff to think about and talk about. I'm resisting taking you back down into the edge, but then this will have to be a three-part podcast. And I'm already fulfilled to take one of your jokes from LinkedIn, because I haven't even gotten into everything that we talked about that I recorded on my tour of 60 Hudson, which is so super awesome. But at least this podcast will give me an excuse to share some of those photos you took, which I thank you for again.
That's all I'm here for, is to give you an excuse to share photos that I took of you at 60 Hudson Street. I think once you pull my string, you could have a 7-hour podcast and we could talk about this stuff all day, and maybe make a couple of salient points, but probably not. I think, look, the big takeaway from me is, it's not as complicated as they will all have you believe. And that's kind of the mission of Nomad Futurist, is to try to demystify the world of digital infrastructure. And the only reason I'm so passionate about that is because we signed the lease on our first, what became, you know, kind of data center when I had just before I reported to college. So I had just graduated high school. We didn't know what the internet was. Right. So my entire adult life has been spent trying to figure out and cut through a lot of, you know, technical talk nonsense and intentional obfuscation to try to overcomplicate an industry that is not all that complicated. It seems like it's complicated because there's a lot of blinky lights and there's a lot of points of failure, et cetera. But if you strip out all that stuff, it's fairly simple. And if anyone is trying to overcomplicate it and obfuscate it, it's because they're hiding something. And I try to be as transparent as possible with, like, what do you need? How do I help you get there? And how do I leverage just the history of the way this stuff was built to make it as, you know, easily consumable as possible? And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to make, you know, connectivity accessible. We're trying to make digital infrastructure accessible, both on the vendor side with customers and on the employee side with, you know, trying to expose the next generation that wasn't there when the sausage was made and had, you know, the reason we're passionate about this industry is because we were there when life became dynamic. A lot of the people that were born post, you know, 2003, only know a world in which the iPhone exists. The iPhone came out in 2007, right? So that concept of the internet just being has made it less exciting for people that just, you know, expect it to work. We're a victim of our own success in a way, right? Because, you know, 99.999% uptime allows you to, you know, not necessarily shine a light on the unbelievable efforts that it takes to make the internet and the digital world that we're all accustomed to work. That part fascinates me and excites me. And, you know, whether on the vendor side or the Nomad Futurist side or the critical venture side or the consulting side or whatever, I just want to get that, you know, excitement out there so we can help move this along and move this forward and grow it.
Amen. I mean, it's absolutely true. The data center industry is holding up the world now. There's no other way to put it. and offering a lot of opportunity too for you know, people who want to get into the industry to work and keep it going, as you mentioned, with, you know, the nomad futurist. So we'll have to leave it there. Philip Koblenz, thanks so much for joining us. We'll see you next time on the Data Center Frontier Show podcast.